to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Ralph W. from L.A.
My name is Ralph White, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank the group for asking me to come out and share tonight. Thank you, Michelle, for a real message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Carolyn, happy birthday to you. And no disrespect to you, Carolyn. 30 years of recovery. Michelle, who's been here since 1990. Some of the other people who I've spoken with since I've been here tonight who've been doing this thing. Some of the old-timers, and when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I still mind my manners, and I'm so grateful to the ones who kept the light on for a drunk like me. And no disrespect to any of you guys, but to all our new friends who stood up, I came here for you tonight. Came here to talk to you. You're sitting in this room right now and you're thinking to yourself, like I was thinking to myself, I remember some days ago, you know, because I'm standing up here tonight. I'm doing the spotlight work in Alcoholics Anonymous. All eyes on me, everybody looking at me. I get to come out, share my experience, strength, and hope, you know. It's been an easy ride for me in some ways. I fell in love with the program, fell in love with the fellowship before I fell in love with the program. From the time I came here to stay, you know, it's been an easy way for me to go because you guys are my people. And that's made it kind of easy for me. And so it's hard for me sometimes to empathize with people when they find it hard to be in the room for me because I love Alcoholics Anonymous. So when we have three legacies in our program, they're sitting up here behind me, unity, recovery, and service. And the first way that I treat that, the unity of this program is in the fellowship. I start going to meetings, and I started going to meetings, and I liked it. You know, when I went back to my aftercare program, I asked an old guy, how long do you have to go to meetings? And he said, you have to go to meetings till you want to go to meetings. And I haven't had to go to meetings in a long, long, long time. Fell in love with it. And after I started going to meetings so long, they kept talking about something. They kept talking about the big book and they kept talking about the 12 steps. And I'm a kid. You know, when I was a kid, I'm fanatical about everything that I get into. I collected baseball cards. I could tell you what Elgin Baylor's, you know, stats were for the playoffs. We were just talking about the old Chargers, you know. I subscribe to High Times, you know. Whatever I get into, I get into, you know. I'm a student of my craft, you know. And so, you know, after I had been coming around here while I got involved, you know, I got really interested in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got really interested in our program of recovery, and that's the second legacy, you know, recovery. You know, and I went through the 12 steps, and I started practicing these principles. And as a result of practicing the principles, I got what it is that we get as a result of practicing these principles, you know, spiritual awakening. And what do you do with a woke-up spirit? Put it in the service, our third legacy. And the service piece, that's the piece that I call them the shadow soldiers. And it's a lot of you guys up in here right now. If you want your recovery to go to a different place, you want it to go to a different level, and you want to really taste what it is to be a participating member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and more importantly, of the community and of your own life. Service. Guys that greeted me at the door when I came up in here. Service. The people that stand back and throw up the gold cup. The people that passed around the things. They're the people who on Super Bowl Sunday, they get up out of their bed. They open up the door. They fire up the coffee pot and they wait for Ralph White to show up. I don't care if it's the seventh game of the World Series. They get up out from in front of the TV. They open the door. They fire up the coffee pot and they wait for Ralph White to show up. They go in our jails and they go in our institutions and they go in our treatment centers and they look for Ralph White. I call them the shadow soldiers, the ones that work in the back without the spotlight and without the fanfare. And my hat is off to you guys who kept the light on for a drunk like me. So the speaker that you have in front of you tonight is extremely grateful. If you're new, you might be thinking to yourself, this guy might be an all right speaker. He seems to be speaking okay, making eye contact with everybody, you know. He might have an all right program, you know. I can't wait till I get up in front of everybody and share. And I'll do better than him. You probably will. Keep coming back. Don't trip. You know. And somebody else is on the opposite end of that tip, and they're thinking to themselves, I'll never be able to get in front of people and talk. I'll never be able to get up there and sound like Michelle. Will I be able to have this thing? Check this out. What I'm doing right now is talking about the program of recovery. It doesn't have a lot to do with living the program of recovery. And this is a living program. It's within the grasp, and it's within the reach of anybody sitting in the seats under the sound of my voice right now. You know, and if you, and I've been doing this a couple of days, and I'm an image guy. You know, you need to know who your speaker is tonight. You know, all front, no back. I'm really not interested in telling the truth most of the time, just what I can convince you of, you know. You know, I'm that kind of guy. Look good guy, that guy, impress you guy. I'm tempted to drop some page line references on you, let you know how well I know the book. You know, but I remember being new to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember sitting out here somewhat probably like Jessica and Jerry and some of the other people who stood up as newcomers tonight. I remember sitting out there and thinking to myself, you know, I know that cat. He's standing up in front of the room, you know, and they brought a speaker in front of us, and he was somewhat like I am tonight. Hair comb, eyes bright, dressed pretty nice, stringing sentences together. And I remember thinking to myself that night, I know this cat ain't been where I've been. I know he has not felt what I felt. I know he hasn't done what I've done. What can this land tell me? So it's real important that I let you know that the man that's standing in front of you tonight is not the same one that stumbled into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous October 11, 1986. I'm going to share with you in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, what I'm like today, in the hopes that somebody sitting out there new will be thinking like I was thinking. Man, I used to do the same things. Man, I used to feel the same way. More important, I too want to have this thing. Grew up in South Central Los Angeles in the heart of Watts. I'm one of six boys. We stayed in a little two-bedroom apartment. Moms and pops stayed in one room. Six boys stayed in three bunk beds in the other room. Earliest memory of my old man was he was an alcoholic, and I didn't want to be like him. My father wasn't abusive, and my father wasn't violent. My father was an absentee drunk, and every other Friday, like clockwork, you knew he wouldn't show up with a check. Be a kid in the neighborhood who would feel like it was his duty to inform my family how my old man had performed up at the pool hall, and I feel ashamed. Shame and I feel embarrassed, and those are feelings I'm familiar with from a very early age. Pops got put out the house when I was 8 or 9 years old. Moms proceeded to raise six boys by herself. Don't know about you guys, but when I grew up, ideal family life was taken from the TV programs of the day. And the TV programs when I was a kid that showed ideal families, Father Knows Best, Leave It to Beaver, My Three Sons, Ozzie and Harriet, Donna Reed. Bet that wasn't jumping off in my house, you know. When you're grown, you get something that's called, you know, perspective. And perspective works a little bit like this. You got a mom that raised six boys by herself. Old Southern Baptist sister. You know, my mom, you know, she didn't have a high school education. You know, my mom, worked two jobs. She took in clothes that she washed and ironed for other folk. She went back to high school, went back to college, you know. And when you're grown, you look back on your life and say, damn, I had a hell of a mom. Look how she sacrificed to raise her boys. But when you were a kid about 9 or 10 years old, and you coming home from school from Wednesday with a couple of partners, and you hit the front door, and mom's in the living room with an ironing board up and a rag on her head, you don't feel proud. You feel ashamed and embarrassed. And you start bringing partners home from school. And if your name is Ralph, you start living in the prison I've lived in much of my life. Prison I live in sometimes, even today. And that's the prison of what I think you think about me. See, I don't know what you think about me, but I'm trapped in what I think you think about me. And I will do whatever it takes to shape and form and mold your opinion of Ralph. I'll wine you, I'll dine you, I'll woo you, I'll con you, I'll bully you, I'll manipulate you, I'll buy you. Please like me. Now, I don't particularly have to like your ass, but please like me. Trapped in what I think you think about me. And to our new friends, if you go to enough meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll hear some common themes from our members. And one of the common themes you'll hear from most of our members that get up in front of a meeting is, I never felt like I fit in. And that's not a part of my story. I'm a little guy. I like a lot of attention. I've never been interested in fitting in. I've always wanted to stand out. And as a result of that, I achieved and I accomplished some stuff in life. Check this out. You know, you guys, it's, my brother talks a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's a year younger than me, and he's 3 months older than me in recovery. You know, we literally slept in the same bed because we stayed in bunk beds. You know, I smelled his feet, he smelled mine. We slept in the same bed. And when you hear Ronnie's talk, you will think we came out of two different households. Same experience. You know, same conditions, different perspective altogether. Ronnie talked about wanting to be other than who he was, wanting to be somebody else, wanting to be that. You know, and I can't imagine being anybody other than me when I was growing up. I can't imagine being anybody other than a young brother growing up in Watts in the 60s. You know, I'm the kind of kid that went to sleep on Christmas Eve with all his clothes on because I couldn't wait for Christmas Day to come. Now, mind you, moms only had $40 or $50 as a budget for these six boys. So, you know, we wasn't getting a lot. Chinese checkers, dominoes, Monopoly, I might get a glove. But on Christmas Day, it would be smells in the house, and it would be cooking, and it would be laughter, and it would be the tree, and the boys would get up and open what gifts we did get, and family would come over, and it would be singing. I never knew a lonely moment. I got five brothers. Baseball was in a game. We made up the whole infield. One of my brothers played left. You know, so I couldn't imagine being anybody other than me. So I'm not here to report to you guys tonight that I'm an alcoholic because I'm a product, you know, of a broken home. Somebody in here grew up with both parents in the house. I'm not here to report to you guys tonight that I'm an alcoholic because I'm a poor kid from the ghetto. Look around the room. You know that ain't the reason. I'm not here to report to you guys tonight that I'm an alcoholic because we grew up with no money. Somebody in here grew up with a silver spoon. I'm not here to report to you guys tonight that I'm an alcoholic because I'm a little guy. We got some big guys up in here. I'm an alcoholic for two reasons and two reasons only. One, when I take one, I can't tell you when I'm going to stop. Two, when I sincerely don't want to put it in me again and start it up again, I put it in me again and start it up again anyway. I'm bodily and mentally different. That's it. That's all. The rest is my story, and my story goes a little bit like this. Every single one of you had me in your classroom. I was usually class president, student body president. I was a straight-A student. I was teacher's pet. I played ball. I made all-stars. On the outside, I should have been okay. On the inside, I've always felt like if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. Yeah, I'm teacher's pet. Yeah, I'm straight-A student. Would have traded it all in if I could have been cool. If I just could have been cool, because in my neighborhood, it was a whole lot more currency placed on cool than on smart. Because the cats who were cool, some of you sitting in here right now, I see you. You know, the ones who was cool in the bathroom, smoking cigarettes, shooting dice, taking quarters from guys like me that brought extra quarters with them, and you knew how to talk to girls, and girls were a mystery to me. I don't know why, fellas. The rest of you guys always had a handle on this manhood thing that Ralph just didn't seem to have. 13 years old, cats would be standing around talking about throwing out with girls already. I didn't know you guys were lying, but I would be thinking to myself, how come I don't know, you know, and that's how I was, you know. So fast forward, I'm 16 years old. I have not touched anything. I haven't touched anything, you know. And 16 years old, Alcoholics Anonymous, that's all. You know, you heard Michelle, that's my girl. You know, she was 17 when she started. I'm 16, I ain't touched nothing. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it took me a while to get comfortable telling my story in Alcoholics Anonymous, because this is the first place I ever landed where folk try to out-bottom each other, right? You know, my first home group, 9604 South Figueroa, it's in the hood, you know. And 9604 South Figueroa, anybody in L.A. knows Figueroa. It's famous for a few things, and one of them is there are women who work Figueroa who don't get W-2s, but we won't go there. So 9604 is a hard group, and when I first landed in 96, you know, they had some stories, and the old cats would be standing up there, and they had some interesting stories. And I wanted a penitentiary story, too, without going to the pen to give one, right? But my story is my story. And I'm not willing to go out and get another one. I'm a schoolboy and I'm a square. 16 years old is when I got started. You know, I get a girlfriend at 16. Now, Ralph with a girlfriend at 16 don't mean the same thing it means for some of you cats. Ralph with a girlfriend at 16 simply means this. I ran with a crew of dudes that went with the same group of girls. One of my boys broke up with this girl, waited a little time to pass, told my other boy I want to go with her. He went and asked her, came back and told me. She said, yes, now I got a girlfriend, right? I don't do girls. I was scared of girls, you know. I'd had other girlfriends before, but this one actually knew she was my girlfriend. Every now and then, carry books home from school, kiss, you know, every now and then. But this particular night, we go out on a double date. Me and my girl in the back seat, older partner of mine and his girl in the front seat. He driving. Drive-in movie, plastic cup of rum and coke comes to the back seat this particular night. Drank that rum and coke down, went down real warm, rushed back to the top of my brain. All of a sudden, Ralph's hands started doing things they had never done. Mouth started saying things it had never said. I had arrived. Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Gave me the courage to do and to be and to say things I wouldn't do, be, and say without it, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. The Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous describes me in lots of places. New friends, we have a chapter in the front of our book called The Doctor's Opinion. And there's a line in The Doctor's Opinion that jumped out at me the first time I read it. Men and women like me drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. I'm not overnight alcoholic, you know. Unlike a lot of people's story, the first night I drank, I didn't get pissy drunk. I didn't throw up all over myself. I didn't make a fool out of myself. I got a warm, tipsy feeling. I kissed and licked and sucked on my girl in some places I had never done before, you know. And that's how my drinking stayed. I would drink to go out on the weekend and have a good time. I graduated from high school in 71, and I graduated higher education in every sense of the word. 71, I'm still just drinking on the weekends to go out. By the end of 71, I'm drinking not only in the night of the weekend, but I'm drinking during the day to get ready for that night. By 1972, I'm drinking not only on the weekend, but I'm drinking during the week after class, and I've now added some non-addictive marijuana to the mix. By the end of 72, I'm drinking, I'm smoking herb, and I'm selling herb. By 1973, I'm drinking, smoking herb, selling herb, doing other drugs, doing it on a daily basis, and you couldn't have told me there was anything wrong with the way I was living. The Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about at a certain point in my drinking career, I won't be able to tell the truth from the false. And the way that that worked for me is this. In the way that I'm doing it, isn't that the way everybody does it? Why would you be young, with a bright future, with a little bit of money, then chasing women and getting low to come with the territory? In those days, man, if you came over to my house and I couldn't offer you something to drink or something to smoke, I wasn't being a good host. And if I went over to your house and you didn't do the same for me, not only weren't you being a good host, I wasn't coming over to your house no more. For what? Now, nothing to discuss, you know. No disrespect to our young friends. I don't mean new friends. Young friends. I'm glad I grew up in the time I grew up. I'm glad I grew up in the year I grew up. I came up in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, free sex, free love, free, you know, that's just, you would go to a concert, you didn't even have to know your neighbor, you just pass and stuff. That's just the way it was. That's how I came up, man. And even though it was a turbulent time in this country, and even though it was a changing time, in some ways it was a simpler time. In 2014, folks got to worry about sexually transmitted diseases, the deadly practice and safe sex. Man, back in those days, I'd go to a club, I'd have a one-question interview for a girl. You get high? If not, next. I don't need to know your last name. I don't need to know your sign. I don't need to know who your mom is. You know, are you doing it like I'm doing it, you know? And that's just the way it was, you know. So I'm at this major university, man, and, you know, and I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to try not to stay over here. I'm going to go over here for a minute and bring me back. Major university, front end of my drinking. But I came to the program four times before I came to stay. You know, and the way I would do the program in my early attempts to do it, and I thought I was serious, you know. My early attempts to do it, I go to a meeting, you know, and I listen to a speaker share like I am tonight, and I'm a good mimic and I'm a good chameleon. I pick out some of the most profound things to my ears that the speaker said. Go to a meeting tomorrow night, make sure the speaker's not there, not too many of you guys. Repeat what he said, tack on or keep coming back. The program works. Thought because I claimed it from the podium it would be true in my experience, and I kept getting loaded, kept getting loaded, kept getting loaded. New friends, there are some things in Alcoholics Anonymous that at first glance they don't seem to make sense. Surrender to win. What kind of shit? Anybody play ball? No. Quitters never win. You know, so you got, it's a whole new lingo you got to get in Alcoholics Anonymous and you got to get with. You know, and one of the, and there are some thin lines in Alcoholics Anonymous, and some of the thinnest of lines make all of the difference. And one of the thinnest of lines that makes the most difference is a thin line between comparing and identifying. And I would always compare and I would never identify. And I couldn't find myself in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't find myself in any of you guys' stories. I would read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, I read Bill's story. First thing I noticed, Bill is an older white guy. Psh, we don't have that in common. You know, Bill was a veteran of foreign wars, Vietnam era draft dodger. You know, Bill was a Wall Street stockbroker. Check out the way I handle money. You know, we ain't got that in common. You know, in Bill's story, if you read it a little bit into it, he says there had been no real infidelity. Miss me on that one, too. You know. And I would always find all the differences. I do the same thing when I listen to you guys share your stories from up here. And when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous to stay, somebody taught me how to read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, Ralph, the same way that you read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous is the way that you listen to our members share their experience, strength, and hope in our meetings. When you read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous and when you listen to our members share their experience, strength, and hope, ask yourself three or four questions. Ask yourself, did I drink like he drank? Did I think like he thought? Did I feel like he felt? Or did I do what he did? And when I read Bill's story in the light of those questions, I found my story. I'm at this major university, and just like Bill, the drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. Just like him, drinks started taking a more important and exhilarating part of my life. You couldn't have told me back then, drinking that Red Mountain, drinking that Annie Greenspring, drinking that Spinata, drinking that Tyrolia. You know what youngsters are drinking. You know, and then I'm graduating to the rum and coke and the gin gimlets and, you know, the vodka and, you know, the Southern Comfort and now Tanqueray and Corbel and Hennessy and Remy. And you couldn't have told me on the front end that it was going to look like it looked in the back end. Bill said something else in his story. He said, out of this alloy of drink and speculation, out of this combination of his thinking and his drinking, he would later forge a weapon that would turn on him like a boomerang and all but cut him to ribbons. I don't talk like that. Old folk where I come from had a shortcut version for that one. They just used to say, trouble always starts out like fun. You know, and when I was up there drinking those concoctions I just told you about, you couldn't have told me it was going to end up looking like it ended up. Somehow I staggered up out of that school, you know, because I'm the kind of guy, I told you, I'm the image guy. And so when I'm rolling with these people, you know, because when I started drinking, it didn't look like it looked at the end of my drinking and using. When I started, I'm rolling with people who we were going to be watching play on Sunday afternoons in the league. I'm rolling with people we were going to be watching play in the association during the week. I'm rolling with people who were going to be business leaders in my town, in this state, and in this country. I'm rolling with people who were going to be political leaders in my town, in this state, and in this country. And I'm going to be one of them. So you couldn't have told me it was going to take me on the ride that it took me for. I came up out of that school. I started working as a counselor for LA City Schools, even though I had the kind of job that should have allowed me to acquire what normal people acquire. I never did that snapshot of Ralph's life. This is when alcohol was working. I'd buy a car, I'd make exactly 3 car payments, then come find it. First time I had a car repossessed, I had the nerve to call LAPD. 9 months behind on the car, no. I want to report a stolen car. They do whatever they do. No, Mr. White, the rightful owner just came and picked up this stuff. Next 2 times, I didn't even trip. I already knew. I'm the kind of brother never had a problem balancing a bank book. Payday, I got money. 2 days later, broke. 0. No problem balancing my bank book. You know, stayed in the crib from 1976 to 1979 without paying rent. A couple of baffling features about the disease I suffer from, and one of them is this. I can't see my relationship with alcohol until I'm free of it. I can't see what it's doing to me when I'm in the mix. So some of the things that are crystal clear to me now, looking back in the rearview mirror of experience, were not at all clear to me when I was going through it. One fact stands out real clear to me about the days I thought alcohol was working. I used to go to work for 2 weeks to live for 2 days. That's it. That's all. Can't tell you the day or the time or the hour. Can't tell you where I was or what I was doing when alcohol ceased to be a luxury for me and became a necessity. I can tell you that it did happen. Cool thing about that, you know, the invisible line. You know what I don't like about the invisible line? Somebody in here probably do. It's invisible. It ain't nothing to say. The next drink, you will be in the region from which there's no return to. You know, in fact, by the time I realize I have a problem with alcohol, I need to do something about it. It's already too late for me to do something about it. Cold thing about the disease I suffer from. You know, and anybody else in here play the regret game in Alcoholics Anonymous? The regret game in Alcoholics Anonymous goes something like this. If I only knew then what I know now, I never would have took. Yeah, right. You remind me of a story about a little boy named Johnny I like to tell. You know? Johnny had a habit his father frowned on. Johnny used to like to play with himself. Father goes to work one day, comes home early, opens little Johnny's bedroom door without knocking. Sure enough, little Johnny's in the bedroom masturbating. Father looks at him and says, son, I thought I told you if you keep doing that, you'll go blind. Little Johnny stopped and looked at his daddy and said, well, daddy, can I just do it till I need glasses? You know, and all. I like that story because it reminds me of me and the life. I see you going down. I'm just going to do it till I need glass. And the book talks about seeking the Lord Companion. It wasn't long before I became the Lord Companion. We don't have enough time. I got married in 1980 on a Saturday afternoon in April at a bachelor party the night before my wedding. You know, none of the guys at the bachelor party are getting married the next day. They all have sense enough to go home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm still at my bachelor party till 7:30 in the morning, me and my brothers. 4 of us made it to the program. Took me home at 7:30, poured me in bed, got me up at 10 o'clock for my 1 o'clock wedding. Tore up. You know what I'm, y'all know. You know, one of them mornings where you're trying to keep the bed from rotating. You don't have nothing left to throw up but stomach lining, one of those kind of mornings, right? And so I'm tore up, and I get, they give me up at 10 for my 1 o'clock wedding, and I'm supposed to say my own vows at this wedding. And I show up staggering and stumbling. My then wife-to-be took one look at me coming in that condition, looked at the preacher, said, okay, scratch the own vows, say the regular on him, right? So now my lines are cut to two words. We get into the ceremony, it gets to me, I get ready to say, and threw up all over. Passed out. Have not taken a wedding picture to this day. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. To our new friends, if you're sitting in here right now, when I first hit the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, although I recognize most of the words they use in the rooms, the way they use them in here is not the way I use them in my everyday walk-around vocabulary. They were talking about a psychic change and this phenomenon of craving, this allergy of the body. And the way they used them in here, I needed some help with them. But the first time I heard pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, didn't need no help with that one. Folk like us don't need a dictionary for pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. I lived pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization up close and personal. And I lived it over and over and over again. See, I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. Remember sitting on my living room couch. Wife coming out the bathroom real fast, pulling her pants up, going to the dining room table, taking her purse up off the table, clutching it real close to her as she went back to the bathroom. I feel this tall because nobody was in the house but me and her, but it got like that in my house. I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. Remember coming home, sticking my key in the door. Wife and two-year-old daughter sitting here and they're both crying. I look over here and homeboy sitting in my seat with a gun pointed at my stomach talking about I want my money right now. Fellas, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I always had a lot of fears and a lot of doubts about do I have what it takes to be a father? Do I have what it takes to be a husband? Because if you're in the life, your track record already gives you the answer, right? Because what's the father's role and what's the husband's role? To protect and to provide, and it's a cold-blooded feeling, fellas. Laying in bed with a woman night after night after night after night. Knowing not only aren't you protecting, knowing not only aren't you providing, you're the one bringing the wolf to the door. See, they came up in my house several times. Each time I pretended to call LAPD. I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. Remember sitting on my back porch. Two-year-old daughter coming outside pulling in my coat. Daddy, daddy, that's my piggy bank. I remember stopping and giving her a little grin. Don't worry, baby. Daddy's going to put some dollar bills in here for this change. And I wasn't ready to be stealing from my daughter, and I wasn't ready to be stealing from my wife. I was an alcoholic with no tools of recovery, and I did what it took to get what I needed to get. I've shared with you that my disease is progressive in nature, and in my experience, it's progressive in a couple of areas. Share one already. It takes more than it used to take in order for me to get the same effect. But my disease is progressive in another area, my behavior. My behavior gets progressively worse. I'm willing to do more readily, chase this thing. First time I hit my wife's purse, if you would hook me up to a polygraph, I would have passed when I told you I'm not stealing this money. I'm going to take this 40, and I'm going to replace it before she knows it's missing. Many with everything in me. Trips me out. I'm a student of this deal, and I live this thing. It's who I am. And sometimes it just blows me away how tenuous the threads are that have us sitting here this evening. 1934, there was a guy in the hospital, new friends, fourth time, same hospital, same doctor. Like some of you have been in treatment over and over, same people. Something happened to dude this time in the hospital. The doctor had already told his old lady, get a black dress. Get ready for his funeral. Something happened to Bill Wilson that December, that in 1934. So profound, and it was so overwhelming. Bill tripped and told the doctor, doctor, I don't know what happened to me. What is it? From the outside looking in, whatever it was so profound. The doctor said, dude, I don't know, but you better hold on to it. And Bill Wilson left that hospital, and for 6 months, he went out looking for people like me and you. And during that period of time, some of his boys he used to do some business with put together a business venture, very lucrative business venture, would have put him on his feet, and he needed to be on his feet. His drinking had put him in a real bad way. Him and his old lady couldn't keep a place staying. So he went down to Akron, Ohio to handle his business, and his business didn't come off too well. Found himself in a hotel lobby on a Saturday afternoon, and that Saturday afternoon in that hotel lobby, he got thirsty. And he could see the bar from the lobby. Could hear the ice clinking in the glasses. About $10 in his pocket. Pay for the room, go get a drink. Pay for the room, go get a drink. You know how when we read chapter 5, we talk about we stood at the turning point? That day in that lobby, Alcoholics Anonymous, in the person of that man, stood at the turning point. And Bill Wilson said yes to the idea of helping out a drunk. A thought came in his mind. It wouldn't have came in mind, but it came in here. I need to find a drunk not to drink. Who would think something like that? I didn't look for many drunks before, but never not to drink. His boy had visited him that November and told him about the necessity of working with somebody. He said, I need to find a drunk not to drink. And Bill Wilson said yes to the idea of helping a drunk. He said yes to the idea of helping a drunk. And that's what we do. That's what we do. That's what we do better than anybody else. That's what we do. The rest of the trappings. One drunk sharing with another is the basis of our society. It's something that seems to happen in the conversation. It seems like in that conversation, there's a power that enters into it. So he finally, you know, he said yes to the idea. And through a series of divine coincidences, he got put in touch with another drunk. He talked to a lady who had a husband like him. And she got her on the phone. I said, I understand you got a husband with a drinking problem. I'd like to meet with him. Dr. Bob was in the doghouse that day. Told his old lady, tell dude I'll give him 15 minutes tomorrow. They met that next day, and that 15 minutes turned into about 4.5 hours. And those two gentlemen set about looking for people like me and you. And in about 2 years, they had found about 40. And I like to think that New York hustler must have looked at that Akron physician and said to him, how are we going to let Ralph White know when it's his time? And they said, we'll put it in a book. And they put me in that book. They put me in that book. New friends, they put you in that book. 2 weeks after I hit my wife's purse and said, I'm going to replace this money before she knows it's missing. Same scenario presented. I'm out doing what I do, spend up all my money, come back and look for the purse. And the idea of replacing the money didn't come to mind. There's a line in the book that describes me to a T. We don't know why, but the alcoholic will be unable to recall with sufficient force pain, suffering, humiliation, weeks, even didn't even remember. Got replaced with a new thought. Last time I took 40, came back looking for the rest, she moved the purse. This time I'll take all the money out the purse, that I don't spend up, I'll sneak it back in the purse. Right? Off and running to hit my wife's purse on a regular basis. Did it one too many Wednesdays, came back one Monday, note was on the screen. Rest of your stuff is at your mama's house. I'm put out in the house, I'm now my daddy. And over the course of the next year, my five brothers got put out their respective homes. All of us ended up at my mom's house and we damn near killed her. When I got put out of my house and went to stay at my mom's house, my ex-wife thought it was something salvageable about this piece of man she married. And she used to bring my daughter over to my mother's house so we could keep a father-daughter relationship every Saturday. And I wanted to be a father to my little girl with everything in me. I really, really, really did. I wanted to take my girl to Disneyland, and I wanted to take her to Magic Mountain. I wanted to take her to a movie on a Saturday afternoon. I wanted to walk up the street with her little hand in my big hand, take her to the store and just buy her some ice cream. I wanted to sit my girl in my lap and read her stories. I wanted to tuck her in bed at night and get a good night kiss. I wanted to get the look from my little girl that I've seen men in the fellowship get, the look like this is my daddy and this is my hero, and the best I could do was 30 minutes. Tell my mom something like I'm going to the store to buy some ice cream. I disappear. I come back on Sunday when her mom was coming to pick her up. And on some of them long Sunday nights, man, I can remember sticking my head around the side of my mom's house, tears flowing. And I see those two heads in the car and the headlights backing out the driveway. And through the tears, I'd be thinking, there goes my life backing out this driveway. And I've heard a lot of people say they were scared of dying out there. Not a part of my story. I was never scared of dying. Scared I was going to keep waking up to the same old thing. Monday the same as Tuesday, the same as Sunday, the same as Christmas, over and over and over again. And I'm so glad God don't make misery comfortable. And on October the 11th, 1986, I got miserable enough and I got tired enough that I got directed to my fourth program of recovery. They took me to the Harbor Light Center on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. And 2 days after I was in there, they took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, they brought a gentleman in there. You know, in that October in 1986, I was in a real bad place, and I was in a real, real bad way. I was in a real dark place. I was full of remorse and I was full of regret. and I was full of, I'll never be able to forgive myself for the things I've done and what I've become. You know, I can't share with you. I hadn't looked in the mirror full face in a couple of years. I couldn't believe what had happened to me. And a gentleman was standing up in front of the meeting, somewhat like I am tonight. And he was sharing about taking from the family, and he was sharing about taking from the job. And I remember looking at him and thinking to myself, yeah, you sharing about doing scandalous things, but you look scandalous. You should have been doing that. I'm different. Y'all ain't going to hear my business. And the speaker seemed like he knew I was in the room. He dropped something on me like this. He said, if you're sitting in this room right now, you are not responsible for your disease, but you are responsible for your recovery. And you have just now tapped into a source of power much greater than yourself. And you don't have to drink, and you don't have to use, no matter what, provided you are willing to fulfill some conditions. And that speaker that night caught my attention. He went on to say, this is the only club you can be a member of where the worse off you are when you get here, the better off your chances of staying. And I got the message of hope from the first meeting that they took me to. He described to me, new friends, what I suffer from. And he seemed like he was inviting me to diagnose myself. Dude was doing something I had never seen before. He was talking about me, talking about himself. Never seen anything like it. Never seen anything like it. Talking about me, talking about himself. And he was sharing some things with me that have stuck with me ever since. If you knew, and I'm going to go off the board right now, I want to talk to our new friends. If you're sitting in here and you're new right now, one thing you got to bring to the table, can't nobody else bring it for you, that's willingness. I don't care how good a sponsor you have. I don't care about the oldest old-timer. Bill Wilson himself could come sit himself right up in here in this seat right now. One thing I got to bring to the table, I got to bring desire. I got to bring this out. And some folk be talking about, you know, when you knew. And Michelle asked, do we have any new friends here for their first time? You know, and there may not be most of our new friends. Now we got used old newcomers, you know. But we might have some new newcomers, too. And if you're a new newcomer and you've never been here, and if you're a used newcomer and you're coming back. You know, sometimes folk will say it take a lot of courage to come back. I don't pray you courage. I pray you desperation. New friends, I got some good news and I got some bad news. Bad news first. It ain't okay, and it ain't going to be all right. Good news, every single one of us sitting in that seat, I love when Bill Wilson here says how dark it is before the dawn. And if it looks real dark, and if it looks real bleak, and if you look like you're out of answers, and if you look like, see, a guy like me, they say that people surrender. You know, I have to be surrendered. Surrender was extracted from me. I don't know about you. Surrender was extracted from me. Ralph, I don't know how I'm going to get this willingness. This is program number 16. How am I going to get it? I don't know a polite way to put it. Well, whooped ass. That's how most of us get here. And I got here in that condition. And thank God for that. I'm going to share some anatomical facts about a guy named Ralph that I discovered. I discovered when my behind is raw, my ears open and my mouth closes. When my behind starts healing, my ears start closing and my mouth starts running. Thank God I was tenderized well enough, long enough this last time, you know, that I came in here and I could hear the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. I could hear the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came up in here and folk talk about doing the work on step one. Step one, I did the work on step one when I was out there. I don't have to come in here and decide that I'm powerless over alcohol. Alcohol decided that for me. Thank you very much. Step two, which is the solution, came to believe the power greater than me could restore me to sanity. Whole deal. Whole deal. Whole deal. If you're sitting in here right now and you think this program is just about not drinking and just about not using, you're shortchanging the program, shortchanging yourself. What this program is really about is about obtaining and maintaining access to a source of power that can do for me what I can't do for myself. What this program is really about is about obtaining and maintaining access to a source of power that can do anything but fail. What this program is really about, you want to see Alcoholics Anonymous, you want to put a face on Alcoholics Anonymous. What this program is really about is about taking people like me and you, drunks and boosters and child abusers and wife abusers, failures as parents, failures as kids, broken down pieces of men and women who don't have dreams and goals and hopes anymore. This program takes people like us, and it sticks us together in one room, and I stick one hand in your hand, other hand in God's hand. We pick up our beds, walk out of these rooms as mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, sons, daughters, employees, employers, role models in our community. This program is about growth. Program is about change. If it's going to be any change, it's made in my life. It begins and it ends with me. One of the things that really cripples speakers when they come, and this meeting is called, you know, the Southern California Speakers. One of the things that really is crippling for a speaker to come and talk about the program Alcoholics Anonymous is we attempt to put words on something you can't give words to. we attempt to give words to something that if you ain't experienced, that you ain't there. If you're sitting in here and you're wondering about it, you know, because I'm going to talk about some new friends that used to make me squirm and it used to make me, you know, because he getting ready to drop the G word on me. Yeah, Mr. Speaker, with almost 28 years up there, it's easy for you to say it. It comes out of you don't understand me. I'm not feeling that. I'm not trying to get with that. You can call it creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, but I know what you're trying to say. You can't fool me. You coming with the G word. It comes easy for you. Check this out. I did not come up in here walking toward the light. I came up in here running from the fire. And if your ass is on fire, you in a good place too. You know, came into the rooms and I grasped this thing and I'm all in. I've been all in since October 11th of 1986. Remarkable things have happened in my life. Remarkable things have happened in my life. I got two little girls at home, you know, and neither one of them is at home right now. One of them ain't a little girl. You know, that two-year-old whose piggy bank I was going in, she's a 31-year-old lady. January the 18th, she walked down the aisle, you know, and she took another man's hand. And as we were walking down the aisle and her daddy was walking her down the aisle, we were talking as the music was playing. And my little girl was shaking. And she was saying, "Dad, I'm so happy today. I'm just sad about one thing." And I said, "What's that, baby?" She said, "This is the last day I'll ever be Rain White. But I'll always be Daddy's girl." From the piggy bank. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a 19-year-old daughter who's never seen her daddy loaded. And one day at a time, she never will. 2 weeks ago, Labor Day, we're back in Boston. Back in Boston, because my girl she's a sophomore at Boston University. And we flew back. And we moved her into her first place. Because that's what dads do. Don't know about you. Don't know about you. All I wanted when I first came was to learn how to spend, not to spend a whole paycheck. And I wanted a key somewhere. How many sponsors we got in here right now? They'll tell you, new friends. They'll tell you. It's the high point of our experience. It's nothing like seeing the light come on for somebody. It's nothing like seeing a broken man or a broken woman come through those doors and walk out of here with their heads up. But I want to share something else with you. I want to share with everybody in here right now because we're missing. There are some other lights that go on every time you and me get together. There's some lights we don't see. They're coming on right now. Every time I go to a meeting, we're doing it right now, me and you. Every time I go to a meeting, I get to participate in some little boy or some little girl getting ready to have mama come back. Every time I go to a meeting, we're doing it right now. Every time I go to a meeting, I get to participate, me and you, some family getting ready to have daddy come home. Every time I go to a meeting, I get to participate in some man or some woman getting ready to have a hell of a mate in their life. Every time I go to a meeting, we're doing it right now. I get to participate in some employer I don't know nothing about, could care less about, getting ready to have a hell of an employee in the workplace. We're doing it right now. Who wouldn't want to be part of a fellowship like that? I always wanted to be somebody important, and I always wanted to do something significant. I can think of nothing more important, and I can think of nothing more significant than being a participating member of the life-saving, life-changing experience that is Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever anybody anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there, and for that I'm responsible. I take it real serious. You'll never hear Ralph White say, "I don't know why I'm sober." I know exactly why I'm sober. I get a blessing so that I can be a blessing. Recovery for me is a gift from God. What I do with my recovery, that's my gift to God. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.